and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Buck Woody from the SQL Azure team. Buck, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate being here.
Buck, I know you're on the Azure team, but what are we going to talk about today?
You know what? Let's talk about how about data as it applies to developers, and let's throw in some Azure there. What do you think?
I don't know. Are you qualified to talk about this? Tell us who you are.
Okay. My name is Buck Woody. I'm a senior technology specialist on the Windows Azure team here at Microsoft, and I'm fairly old, so I've been in technology a really long time. We didn't actually have computers when I started. We just yelled zeros and ones, you know, at each other. And so then I started out with just sort of focusing on data. And so for about 30 years, I've been in data structures from working for NASA for a while and U.S. Air Force and all over the place and manufacturing firms. And now I'm here at Microsoft. And I teach at the University of Washington as well.
Perfect. Buck, I'm telling you, some things never change. I still yell at my computer today.
Well, there you go. Do you yell zeros and ones or just in general?
No, very specific things, not general.
they usually break out into 4-bit parts. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay, so developers using data, tell me what you mean.
You know, I think Jerry, that the big problem is people are coding from the wrong. You're a developer, right, Jerry?
I'm a developer. My happy place is Visual Studio.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I just wanted to kind of let you know as well, then you're probably coding from the wrong end.
I hear that a lot. Not always about coding. Go on.
Well, there you go. Start at the other end, Jerry. Yeah, had a nickel. So at any rate, the thing I run into a lot when I'm talking to people, they'll talk about cloud, and I hate the word cloud. Only a marketing person could come up with something that's a big, gaseous, amorphous, undescribable blob and try to sell it. But at any rate, we call it our cloud in Azure here. But Azure is a platform. It's a place where you can write code and store data. And so people get a little confused about how to start with that. What's different than a traditional approach? So I thought we might just chat about that today.
I think that's great. I'm with you on cloud. You remember back in the day when we called it internet? Oh, wow.
Yeah, everything was I or E. Wait a minute. Some people still do that. So there's I love marketing terms because God bless them. It moves product, I guess. That's the point, right?
Now, wait a minute. I'm coding from the wrong end. What am I coding to start with? Let's get into this because I'm starting to become offended.
You're becoming offended? Perfect. So you're basically in the place where most people are when we meet. So I think that most of us understand a standard design when we're writing code. And it doesn't matter what kind of code it is, by the way, or what language. I'm not religious about that. As long as you're using .NET, you know, it'll work just fine. But the point here is that we normally start with the presentation layer. We get some graphical screen in Visual Studio, right? We draw up the screen. We start laying in buttons. We become fascinated with placement. And we rename graphical paradigms into something that's new and sounds cooler and so on. And then once we're done, we have to figure out what those fields are going to do. Like this one's added to that one. And then that data is stored somewhere, somehow. So we kind of start at the front end and work back. And my problem with that is it doesn't scale. It also doesn't allow me now. How many times have you heard somebody say, I want to write this thing one time and have it work on every device? Remember that?
Yeah.
It's a dream. You remember Java? How awesome was that language?
It's the only portable language.
I know. I love Java. I mean, it depends on which one, but I love Java.
Yeah, portable to where was the next one, right?
Yeah.
It's too bad.
The great thing about standards are there's so many to choose from, right? That's the good thing. So anyway, we start out with this sort of standard design of starting with the front end. Moving through the processing of that data, and then maybe there's a data abstraction layer, the DAO, and maybe that's like Entity Framework or Link or something else. And then we put it on storage. And of course, if it's a, you know, we have SQL or we have Oracle, so everything goes there, right? Videos and all. We just stuff them in the database, right?
That's why it's called storage. You got to store it.
Storage. You got to store it. So obviously, a relational database is where you put everything.
Now,
XML.
I don't know if everybody listening would immediately agree with you.
Everybody puts everything in our – we've got to buy a big relational database and just stuff it in there, Jerry. Come on.
If it performs poorly, just buy more RAM, Buck. We know that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Scale it up. Just a bigger box.
Let me just say, this four steps that you have, this actually is pretty standard. Yeah, I mean, a presentation layer, processing or logic, having some sort of data interaction, maybe that's my web service or whatever in a database, that's pretty standard. And I wouldn't hesitate to say that probably represents 99% of all the apps that exist in the world.
Yep,
and
that's
so
right.
Have 99% of all the apps that exist in the world that probably run the world, have they been built from the wrong end?
Yeah, they have for now. So back 100 years ago when I was in computers and worked inside mainframes, the idea was the presentation layer was a green screen over a 300 baud modem. So you couldn't put a whole lot of intelligence there. The screens were very dumb and literally teletype in some cases. So then we had to figure out how to do the computing, and computers weren't powerful, so they were purpose-built. You would have one that was a front-end processor and a gateway array, and this one did logic, and this one did floating point math, and so on. And you would break out the code, and it would run on top of that. And we got into an interesting pattern then, because you put code over data. Wherever the data was, you put the code that was going to process it right over the top of that. And that's a smart thing to do because, again, we were working with low-powered systems and high latency. I mean, when you think of a 300 baud modem, that's almost like my cable provider here at home. I mean, my cable provider is slower than that, but, you know, it's approximating it. So when we got the computers and we put everything decentralized and we made PCs, everything was in a box. The screen and the keyboard were connected to the processor and the drive that housed the code. So in essence, we squished all of this, and it works. It works really well. I fire up my laptop with Linux or Windows or whatever, and I can just work. It just works.
That's right.
The problem is it doesn't scale, because now we have to start spreading things out, and so we then throw that laptop, and we call it a server, and we use the same processors and so on. We just use different hard drives and bigger cases and a little bit more power. And we call those servers, and we have to keep getting a bigger and bigger and bigger because they do everything. But in the new world, they don't do everything anymore. We do need to put the data where the code lives. But if I'm in one building, I've got security aspects, I've got scale aspects. How do I make my app scale rapidly out? But that's not even the main problem. The main problem is scaling back, because I can buy more computer. That's easy. I just can't give it back when I'm done.
Yeah.
You look at a pizza shop. So let's take a look at this from a pizza shop perspective. You're a dev. And so I say to you, design.
Just slide it under the door, Buck.
Slide the pizza under the door. No, I want code for my pizza shop. So how many pizzas do I sell today? Right now? Do you know? I mean, a few hundred, a few thousand. Okay.
No, a thousand. We're successful. 100,000.
Yeah, how about Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah, we're going to sell a million that day.
Okay, so I'm asking you, the system architect, to design the computer and code that can handle that. So tell me what I need to buy.
Well, you're going to need to buy some, you're going to need to provision some dough, and we're going to need a bunch of ovens. I mean, a bunch of ovens. And we're going to need cars for delivery.
Let's talk about the computing side.
I was making pizza.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. Yeah.
Because you're the computer guy.
Oh, I totally am. So yeah. What does a pizza shop need as far as computing power in order to take care of the
Super Bowl Sunday?
Well, I guess not too – it depends on what I have today, but probably not too much other than maybe the bandwidth to handle the traffic that might be coming in, especially if I take orders, say, over the Internet, orders over the telephone, make sure I can handle all of that through POS systems that I've got lined up so that there's not too long of a line, people aren't frustrated and go to my competition.
How big is that? How big are those computer systems? Do you know? Do you have any idea?
Well, no, I don't know. You mean the POS systems that we're using, or do you mean
the code that you're writing that swallows all this? How big is that? It's got to be monstrous, right, for Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, it's certainly – not only does it have to be monstrous, but it has to be more than monstrous just in case we're super successful. We don't want to get a black eye.
Now, what do you do with those computers Monday morning?
eBay. That's eBay.
You're going to sell them? Because that's where you bought them, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So we got a capacity problem because it won't stretch and come back, right? Using the pizza dough analogy. Super Bowl Monday, you don't need any computers hardly because nobody's buying pizza. Super Bowl Sunday, if you're a chain, you need, and it's literally in the tens and hundreds of thousands of nodes and tons of data. We're talking tons of data. The routes, the payment stuff, the inventory control, it's insane. It's a really complicated system. In fact, I've designed one of those, and it's really hard to do. If you start with this standard design, now I say to you, okay, Jerry, write me some code so that people can order pizza. And you make a nice web form, I would assume, right? But
sure.
Then you make a fat code that's going to run on my local PC as well. So
that's right.
You only want to write this once, though. So you're going to write, how about my phones? I've got an Android phone and one of those Fruit phones, and I've got a Windows phone, and I've got all these phones. What's the experience like for that on a web interface for a complicated pizza design? What does that look like?
It's going to be complex.
Yeah. So this is broken. This won't scale. This won't work because every piece has to get bigger. And the presentation layer, if I try to write it once for all devices, is just going to bomb marvelously. So
yeah.
I think there's a different way to think about this. And the way I start thinking about it is from the data end.
The right end is the data end.
I think you start on the other end, the data end. You don't even think about the screen yet. Not at all. Zero.
Okay.
Don't even think about the screen because it doesn't matter. I don't care about the screen till I'm done.
Mm.
I know that's awful, isn't it?
But stick with awful.
Me. This is all awful. Right. So what we do is we tear apart the business problem and we say, what are you storing? And why are you storing it? And how long are you storing it? What kind of data is it? And so on. This is something I call data classification. And then after that, I need to figure out the consistency model. If I'm going to scale, I can't be ACID. I can't be a relational database. It's just not going to, there's only so big that's going to get.
Yeah.
And people might say, oh, no, you could put anything in a relational. And you can, up to a point. You just can't get away with relational data for everything. I know that's hard to hear, but it's true. So what you do is you tear apart the datum. And when I'm looking at a map to figure out the right route, does that need to be in a relational database? Does it really change that much, the maps of the streets? Can be relaxed. So that data might move over into non-ACID, maybe the NoSQL. And by the way, Jerry, don't tell the kids that they didn't invent NoSQL. It's just COBOL flat files, but it's okay. Just our secret. So then the next thing we need to take a look at is the data path. Where does it come from and where does it go to?
Okay.
If I'm moving huge amounts of data, I need sort of a low latency line for that. But if I can chunk out the data differently, perhaps I can use lower latency lines if I move the data where the compute is, which is a key factor. And then finally, of course, there's security. I need to, if I'm sending my name across the wire, I don't care. But if I'm sending my credit card number across the wire, I do care. So that data might have to actually land in different places. What I'm saying is it all might not end up in a relational database.
I see. Well, let's back up to make sure I understand. Data classification, so you're saying that you really can figure out most of the data that you've got going on without any UI consideration really at the beginning.
Absolutely.
Well, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
I think because I'm building a pizza system, you're probably right because I know all the components of a pizza right now.
Yeah.
But what if I'm a different type of company? What if I'm a startup I've got a novel idea. Isn't the UI going to be the driver to tell me what I really need?
Absolutely. It certainly can. And the neat thing is if I can now start looking at that data classification, you just gave me some requirements. I don't know what the data might end up being. That's really sucky for an RDBMS. It kind of requires you to build the database first before you start stuffing things in it. But it works real well on a NoSQL approach. And by the way, I don't like the term NoSQL either, but it contains a bucket of technologies that mean, I'll use it with the polite term of not only SQL. So this is other data stores. Things like XML can handle a ragged structure.
Yeah.
So
let me back you up again. So
yeah.
You're saying NoSQL doesn't really exclude using a relational database. You're saying in concert, they can really be a better solution.
Absolutely, and should.
Yeah.
In fact, if I classify my data and I do these points that you see on the screen, that's exactly what should happen. That's exactly what should happen. The data should fall out where it falls out. So that's exactly the part that should happen.
Buck, do you have any rules of thumb when you're looking at data and you've got this immediate determination of this is excellent for a relational database or this is not excellent for a relational database? What are some of the things that guide you?
Yeah, so the first thing is how strongly typed do I want it?
Mm.
In a relational system, they were invented for a reason, by the way, and one of the reasons was the data typing could start wandering around within the store, and you couldn't get declarative referential integrity. It was harder to get DRI. You had to rely on programmatic referential integrity. I had to make sure my code put an integer down in storage. There was no real way to mark the datum such that the datum was an integer. It's harder to do when you don't have something like a relational database. Now, some of the NoSQL offerings have strongly typed systems as well. But when you lay it down on the drive, is it strongly typed? And one of the main ways to do that is an RDBMS. The next one is it truly transactional? So I take $100 out of checking and put it into savings. This is fictional. I'm married, so I don't actually have $100. Or savings. My wife has all that. So the point is that if I want to pull it out and I want to put it into savings, it's vital to me that if it comes out of checking, it goes into savings. I don't want to lose the $100.
Right.
It's vital to the bank that if it goes into savings, it comes out of checking, because they don't want to lose $100.
I mean, we could care less about that second one.
Yeah, I'm more with relaxed consistency on that one. But the point is that we're sitting there with a gun in each other's head. That's a transaction. One thing happens or it doesn't happen. I want it atomic. So if I have an atomic, and so interestingly, my decisions around a relational database management system for a given datum, not the data, but a datum, a set of data, smaller piece of data, is the ACID, atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. Those are the things I care about. If those things can be relaxed, then I can move to a NoSQL model.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, and some of the NoSQLs, by the way, provide some of the ACIDs. They don't provide every letter. They've got a few of them, right? So there you go. All right.
I love how you have security last. I mean, in a sense, you can really see how you're kind of like a developer. We always put security last, too.
These probably shouldn't be numbered. They should probably be dotted. So you would do these things in order. But what I do is they're kind of a sieve for me. So if it's a classification of data, that might dictate its consistency, model, path, and security. That's the only reason they're in this order. But
sure. You
could reverse it. That'd be fine. But if you haven't torn apart the datum yet, then you probably will try to secure the whole record, which is incorrect. When I was in the military and we would classify a document, you weren't allowed to classify the whole thing. You had to classify certain pages because it cost money for what they call document disposition. So to get rid of it. Yeah. They believed when they made that data, at some point it wasn't going to be around because it cost money. It's a good mental paradigm, because our hard drives right now are the mental equivalent of, or digital equivalent of, the kitchen drawer that everybody has that you can't open anymore.
I got two of those.
Yeah, there's a string in there and there's tape. You know that. That's all you can actually see.
There's also chewing gum, but I can never find it.
Or maybe a small child. I don't know. One of the pets I got. Yeah. So at any rate, yeah, these don't have to be in this order, but I do find that they tend to fall out this way fairly nicely. The point is, I'm not saying you do security last or you don't do security. These are a package. So these are asset. I would put this in a database. So then that lets us do a few things here. The first thing it does, it lets us pick the direction. Now that we've decided this, I can now pick the path for the data, because keep in mind, I'm going to put compute over data. That's the key. That's the key to speed, is compute over data. That's Hadoop, that's MapReduce, that's everything you've heard about lately in big data, which we'll talk about in some other time. But the point is, you put compute over data. So now I can pick it because I've made these other decisions. Notice I don't care about the front end yet. My belief is that when I get all done, I hire developers that are really good with iPhones and really good with Win phones, and really good with Android phones, and really good with HTML, and really good with tablets, and I pay those people to write my front end. And I'll talk about why in a minute. Because these systems that you see right here represent services. So I'm all about the MVC pattern, and the model view controller pattern, and I'm all about the fact that the view I could care less about. I'll let people who are artistically gifted develop some really pretty front ends, because I suck at that. But yeah. I do know goes intos and goes outas. I do know that. So I have APIs for everything. And whatever it is, that's the key. Whether it's a phone, another computer, another system, a web page, it has a contract around what it can get and what it can put in based on who it is, the security model. And as long as you abide by that, I don't care what you look at it as. I'm future-proof from the design portion. But I'm working now across data. Because I've done that, this becomes, I can layer in now services behind that, which become my DAO. And my data access layer, here's what's beautiful about that, I even break that apart, such that when I make that one component faster, everything that accesses data just got faster, everything. If I put a cache over that, everything takes advantage of the cache. So, and if I fix a problem, it's fixed everywhere. It's kind of like what you do in a database with a stored procedure or something, but you're doing it in code. And now I can decide, where does that go? And we'll talk later about the different data types that a cloud service like Azure has. But maybe a particular datum based on the classification fits well into a relational database. And there's ones on premises, and then there's ones that we have as a service. And then there's tables and queues and blobs and all kinds of places where I can stuff data. I can either use a linear pattern like this to where one depends on the other, or I can actually just go get directly that one datum for a given activity. So assume for a moment I've got a phone and I want somebody to be able to place a pizza order on the phone, but not interact in a rich way with my company. Yeah. So that would just go straight to the pizza widget, enter the data for the pizza, and get the pizza delivered to your house. If the person wanted to write about how wonderful the employee or whatever was, I might put that in a different interface like the web, allowing them to enter it there, and it might exercise more of this data. Does that make sense?
It does. How in this model, how would I promote data to a different type of storage if I start to realize that this needs to, now I need to move this because it's way more popular than I ever thought it would be, let's say.
Yeah, so that becomes interesting because you've got this data abstraction layer there. You never move it. The contract is still, if you give me a credit card number, I know what to do with it.
So now, I'm shuffling around on my storage strategy. My data access layer keeps that so abstracted away that my clients don't have to even think about where is it.
Right, and I've seen people lately in these two center pieces here implement an amazing amount of caching. Within Azure, you're able to cache and you're able to pin the cache. That means it's essentially an in-memory database, essentially. You're taking some dependencies there, but it works. And they flush it down, and so the database is now the factory, the class factory. And then what happens behind it, the persistence layer, who cares? It needs to be persistent, but eventually.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Eventually. Who cares?
It's sort of, for the client's perspective, none of their business.
It really should be, right? Everybody should be abstract. For instance, when I drive to the gas station today, I only have two contracts with them, well, maybe three. One is that they'll take my credit card.
Yep.
Two is that the nozzle will fit into my tank. It's got to be the same size, and it's got to give me gas, but that's implied. But that's all I care about. I don't care who runs the store. If they change the look of the store, if they put in a different Coke machine, if they sell the thing to another gas company, I could care less. My contract is three things, gas, credit card, and nozzle. As long as those work, it works. If you were to treat your systems this way, if we were to make gas stations the way we make cars, right, every car would need that specific gas station. And as I bought more cars, they'd have to make the gas station bigger.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing today, I think. And again, I understand where the paradigm came from. It came from the fact that we took all of the disparate parts and we shoved them onto a laptop. And that's great. But that doesn't scale.
That's right. As soon as it's small like that, you can go in either order, right?
Do whatever you want.
At either end, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
As soon as you want it to scale up and perform, not just scale up, but also perform.
Mm-hmm. And also make you independent of these front-end devices. We keep hearing about the death of the PC. I still need a keyboard. I've not gotten good enough to yelling at a phone or whatever to make it do what I want. I need a keyboard. And that's fine. So I don't believe in the death of it, but I do, of course, see the tablet and I see the phone I get it. I do. And so to make yourself more future-proof, I think if you just take that front end and just say, whatever, here's kind of the way I think about it. The data that I own, my name, my social security number, is with me forever. So the data is permanent. The systems that hold it, the hardware, we don't replace those very often. The operating systems that run that hardware, we don't change out very often. The coding paradigm, we change a little more often. The front end, we change all the time.
Right.
So I think if we start out on the thing that changes every week and we base everything on that, we make it very brittle. So I say start out with what doesn't change. Start out with the data.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Okay. So maybe next what we can do, and the next time we chat, we can talk a little more about the Azure components and start putting some flesh on these bones a little bit. This is all conceptual so far.
Let me ask you a quick question from a developer's point of view, though.
Sure.
When I do build a front end, one of the things I know is that if I can get the data back tailored to my client, let's say I'm going to show a whole bunch of things. If I can get the data back tailored to me, I can have a much more performant client. Like I can have it all there ready for me rather than call, 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 call. And on a totally kind of agnostic set of services, how am I going to be able to tweak that performance on my client when it doesn't know about my client when it was built in the first place?
Yeah, so this goes back to that mainframe pattern of green screens. The green screens had no design. Literally, it was the total afterthought. The constraining factor was the wire. So if you know that you're going to be making a web-enabled application, you have to imagine that as well. So when we look at standard web development today, we don't make them chatty, or we shouldn't, right? And you've seen apps that are chatty underneath. That are using a lot of client-side processing. Now, that isn't to say you couldn't stream back a bucket of data over time and then do something with it and then send deltas back. That's a common pattern. Doesn't break this at all. In fact, you could even stream that data because you're using one API that reads, and you could update changes using one API that writes. The interesting thing is that we already have this paradigm today. And we've actually had it for a long time. It's called Outlook. If you think about the Outlook client and how it works, is the mail system dependent on Outlook?
Yeah, not at all.
Not at all. Is Outlook dependent on the mail system?
It's
Not at
totally.
all. I can
Whoa,
actually,
how is it not?
not at all. I can be at 30,000 feet, not connected, and I work just fine.
Ah, yeah, it can work offline, sure.
Why? Because it bundles up the deltas and then floods them through. It's the
Yeah.
same. It's the same pattern. So I don't care if you have a rich, fancy client that does lots of work. I'm saying that the state change that you manage needs to be minimized.
It kind of goes back to your four bullets a little bit, where you had these bullets and they weren't necessarily in order. The data is going to consider all of them, and you use it as a sieve, as you were saying. I guess in a way, the client doesn't dictate to the database, but at the same time, when you're structuring your data, you have to be aware of your client.
Oh, sure. Of course you
Yeah.
do. And let's go back to the thing that you said earlier, which is what if my data, based on who I am or what I am, changes on the client and I need to send that back? I've seen that pattern as well, and we'll talk about Azure tables the next time. But when you're looking at a key value store, it becomes immaterial because
Right.
it's a key and the values can be different on every row. It blows an RDBMS person's mind. No structure can change. It per row, but it works. And it's hard to conceptualize until I teach them how to use it in Excel, which is kind of scary, but it's the world's database,
It is. It runs most of the world, no doubt about it. Buck, I
right?
appreciate this. This is a great conversation to help developers who use the skills they've developed all along. You pat them on the back. They learned on a smaller system, no doubt, and they're taking those architectural concepts and moving them up into a larger deployment, and they are going to need to now change the way that they're approaching it. They're doing it from one end. Now you're talking about how to do it from another end. I'm excited to see how we can talk about this, especially using the offerings of Azure. Buck, will you come back and talk to us more?
Yeah, I think that works.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thanks again.